Grab your notes. Bill Cosby, the American father, laying down the law. And I know he's just playing, but sometimes when people come to church, they think that's the place where God's going to lay the law down. And so they avoid church because they're just so certain that if they go there, they're going to find out all the things about their life that God doesn't like, and they're going to get this big, huge, super lecture. And we've been in this series of talks, basically trying to discover this. Is it possible to follow Jesus and be happy? Or is it just a bunch of religious rules and regulations that really just sucks the happiness right out of you? Or is it possible to be happy and follow Jesus? When he shows up on earth, people aren't happy with the church. And they're not happy with God. And so they start to leave the church. And they didn't have a belief system that saw God as someone that was for them and that they could follow. In fact, the things that they believed about God caused them to not want to be with God at all. And it is true, whatever you believe will show up in how you live. And this is our communion service tonight, and the big idea this weekend is that what you believe about God determines how you live with God. It's the big idea. We have one every weekend. And basically what had happened is the church had ruined God's reputation. So think about it like this. This is what it's like. Because, by the way, Christians and the church have always been responsible, the people of God have always been responsible for God's reputation. And people see us and they think, well, that must be what God's like. And so what had happened in Jesus' time is the church had totally jacked up God's reputation, so nobody wanted to be with God, nobody wanted to be in church. And here's what it'd be like. Let's say that you start a little company. So you got this little idea, and you're going to start a little company, and you eat, like, just you and your wife or your girlfriend, you start this company. And one of the main values you have is going to be customer service. So you decide, hey, like, we're really going to care about our customers, the people that do business with us. We're going to really treat them right. And like, we're going to be all about, you know, making certain that the people that we do business with feel cared about. And so you start that process, and, you know, there's just two of you, and it starts to build a little bit. People start to get it that, like, hey, we really, like, wow, they care about us at this company. And so, you know, you hire a couple of more people, and it grows a little bit more. And stuff's going really well because, like, you really mean it. You sincerely want your customers to feel valued and cared about. And so this sort of, like, this reputation gets going. And pretty soon, as your business grows, your company is known out in your industry as the place that cares about people. And then there's what happens. Like, you hire this one customer service representative, and they just don't have that same value system. And so they start to treat people really differently, and they start to, like, take advantage of them, and they take them for granted. And pretty soon they've got this sort of attitude, you know, towards customers. It's like, you're lucky I'm even helping you. And pretty soon, like, the way that they do customer service is way different than what you had decided in the beginning. And people start to feel like, man, you know, like, what's changing in that company? Because it really seems like they don't care about people anymore. And then just a couple of more, like, sort of get the same idea. And then things start to unravel in your company. And pretty soon, the reputation that you once had changes. And that's kind of the mess that Jesus walks into. Because the reputation of God, everything is completely jacked up because a few people had decided, then a few more people had decided that we really don't care about people. What we care about is the religious product. And by, you know, religion can become a product. And anytime you care more about the product than the people, you're in trouble. And like I said, we really represent it. Like, we shape people's ideas. And it's really for us to represent God. We give him his reputation. And so you might be thinking, yeah, and that's exactly why I never tell anybody I'm a Christian. I mean, I would never tell anybody that I'm at church on Sunday night because I don't want anybody to know. If you're like me, you know, you don't put one of those little fish on your bumper, like, because I'm such a crappy driver. I don't want to, like, give people the idea that all Christians drive like me, you know. And so, but some people, like, keep it way on the down low. They don't tell anybody that they're Christian. They don't say anything at work. It's definitely not on their Facebook. And it's just, they might go as far as, like, non-profit. But, I mean, that's about it, is because they don't want anybody to know. Because they're thinking in their mind, it's like, well, gosh, I don't want to give bad, like, I don't want to give, like, a terrible reputation to God, so I don't tell anybody that I'm a Christian. So it'd be like this. Think about this now, process this. Let's say you had a girlfriend, And she tells you, gosh, I just love you. I like you so much. I like you so much. But anytime you guys are out together, she never introduces you as her boyfriend. And then pretty soon you start noticing that on Facebook it doesn't say that like you're in a she's not in a relationship. And now how about this one? Like at work, she never even acknowledges to any of her other girlfriends that you're her boyfriend. And so you ask her one time, you're like, well, gosh, what's up with that? She goes, well, I really love you and everything. I just don't want anybody to know that we're together. And so that's how she is. And she goes out on Friday nights with the rest of her girlfriends and she dances with people and stuff like that. But she never tells anybody that she's with you. Or how would you feel if you're married to someone and every time they left the house, they took off their ring? Why are you taking off your ring? Well, I don't want anybody to know I'm married to you. But I love you. How long would you stay with them? God goes through it every day, and yet he remains. He just hangs in there. And now back to this, so here's what Jesus is like. He shows up, right, and he watches how this is going in the church. And here's what's crazy, is that he shows up, and when he starts to treat people in the way that he feels that they should treat, when Jesus shows up and he starts to care about people, the church, the leaders in the church try to correct him. So that'd be like you're running your company and someone's watching you do customer service and you're doing it the way you feel like it should be done, like I care and I want like your experience to be good. And they come up and they start correcting you. Hey, man, what do you do? You're going to give the farm away. You don't treat people like that. They bow their knee to you. We run this company. That's what the church did to Jesus. I mean, it's like can you imagine if the employee showed up to you, the owner, and started lecturing on you, like how you should run your company? That's what happened to Jesus when he came. In fact, imagine how he felt when he heard this. Look in your notes. Now, the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him, talking about Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, so here's the church guys. This man welcomes sinners and eats with them. So here they come. You don't treat people like that. I mean, that's not how we act in the church. I mean, we make people like measure up around here. And how would he have felt? And so he tells them this story, parable. Whenever the church and God are not on the same page, it is a problem. And Jesus shows up, he's like, whoa, we are not on the same page here. Somebody's getting fired. And it ain't gonna be me. And so he tells him a story because he's going to try. He's going to say, let's see if we can all get on the same page. And I'm going to read it to you to come up on the screens. And we've been talking about it the last couple weeks, but I want to read the whole thing. So just pretend you're back in story time in kindergarten, and I'm going to read you a story. Here it goes right here. So Jesus says this. He says right here, he goes, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to the father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So the father divided his property between them. Doesn't sound like great parenting. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he'd spent everything, been there, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of the country who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to a census, he said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I'll set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of the hired men. So he got up and he went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and he was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Check this out. But the father said to the servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and he's alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard the music and the dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him, what's going on? Your brother's come home, he replied. Your father's killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, look, All the years I've been slaving for you, I've never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never even gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who squandered his wealth of property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him. My son, the father said, you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost, and now he's found. So he tells him this story. So get the scene. There's all these people around that haven't gone to church for a really long time, and they hear about Jesus, and at first I'm sure they were standoffish. Yeah, right. Yep. Doubt it. But for some reason, they decide to go check him out. And East Lake Church exists for people that just want to check it out. We didn't really start this church as much for people that were going to church all the time. We started it for people that wanted to check it out for whatever reason. It's a church for everyone. And so they see and hear about Jesus and they decide that we're going to check this out. And what they find out right away is it's a safe place to be with him. He makes a person that is far away from God feel close to God. Normally, what people thought as they wanted to be close to God, there was something that they had to do. They get around Jesus and they find out he does everything to make them feel close. And so crowds start to develop. Eventually, there's hundreds and hundreds and then thousands of people that are checking out. And the church finds out about it and they said, you know what? Our attendance is really dropping and we're not liking this man and we're not liking the things that he's saying. So they would go be a part of these crowds too. And that's what's happening when this occurs. They see who he's hanging around with. They see the people there and say, you know, we've worked hard for a long frickin' time to keep these people out of the church. And here he comes down and he's bringing them all back in. They're not happy. And so they're there too. And he tells them this story. He says, listen, we got to get on the same page. Are you on the same page with God? Because when you're not on the same page and you wonder, gosh, how come stuff not clicking between me and him? Jesus will always make the first move. He tells him this story. And we've talked about it. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the younger brother. So just in recap, you remember him? He's the one who says, hey, give me my money now. I don't wait time for you to kick the bucket. I am so out of here. I'm like off to Vegas this time. It's better than Wendover. I've got money this time. So he runs to Vegas. He has this rip-up life. He parties and gets really crazy. And he finds this out. He says, fun and happiness are not always the same. You can have a lot of fun, man, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be happy. And he's startled when he starts to do things that he never thought he would do. So just think back for a second. These are the ones that can be like a knife inside when you recognize this. You're like, you know what? I never thought I'd do that. I've got a few of those on my trail where it just stops you because you can't blame anybody. You can't say anything. It's just those times of reflection where you really have to settle down. You say, and it could be anything. It doesn't matter what it is. But really what you say is to yourself, gosh, I saw other people do it. I never thought I'd stoop that low. And good news for you, if you came tonight, Jesus definitely cares about that stuff. Because he knows you can scrub and scrub and scrub and scrub until you are red raw. And you're not going to get those out. He'll take them out. That's why he tells the story about this guy. He says he did stuff he thought he never would do. Which, and for him, began to turn him something healthy because he starts to come to his senses like, ooh, this is definitely not working just to try to be have fun all the time. And so, that's his thing. Now the older brother, he's really different. He's Mr. Perfect. He's like leisure suit man with a tie. I mean, he's got a briefcase, and he's like the perfect son, and he's a religious guy. He knows all the promises. He shows up at church. He can quote all the things they say. And the problem is he's really unhappy on the inside. And so he's the opposite. And so Jesus tells this story, polar opposite, so we can all find ourselves in the story. You might lean towards the younger brother. I'm the crazy dude. I'm the black sheep. I like to have lots of fun and everything. I tell everybody I've got this rip-up life. When I go to bed at night, my soul is stained. It's killing me. Or you might be like the other guy. Everybody thinks I'm great and I'm perfect and everybody thinks I'm like all that. And I'm the one that's going to, I got my education and everything, but I'm dying on the inside because none of it seems to matter. Now, tonight we're going to look at the father in the story, which in this story is the God figure. So when you think about how the father treats the sons, his children in this story, that's how he treats us. And so we'll look at the father. Okay. Now the first thing is we'll look at how he treats the younger son. So right in your notes, you can be happy when you're committed. not committed to the hospital or a mental institution or any of those things, but being committed to God or other people, because he has a big problem, this younger son. Here's his problem, and it causes a lot of stuff for him. He's afraid to make commitments. What is it that you know you should be committed to, but you're too scared to do it? You're just like, oh, I don't know. I think I'm stalling a bit longer. Someday, maybe. Well, I'll commit when they do this. So that's the younger son. He's like, you know, I'm so scared. Here's his mantra. Here's what he says to himself. I'll never be happy if I'm committed. And so that's how he lives his life. And the Father, God, just waits. He just waits for him. Is God waiting for you to do anything, make any commitment? Ask him. Is he waiting? And you know how it is to wait. I mean, who is overjoyed to go to the DMV? Like, ooh, great, you know. Or who likes to wait in traffic? Or who wants to go to a restaurant? How long would it be? I was wondering if we get a table. Well, it'll be about 45 minutes. It's like nobody goes, right on, I was hoping to wait. You know, it's like, no, like nobody likes to wait. In fact, a lot of people get really bitter when they wait. But you need to know something from this story, that if God is waiting for you, he's not bitter with you. He just waits. It's like, okay, I'm right here. I'm waiting. Here I am. But he's not bitter. He's waiting. And this younger son, you know, now you might cause trouble for yourself, and you might cause trouble for other people by waiting. If you're stalling, it may cause things for you and other people, but God's not bitter with you. And that's important to get that, because just about the time, this can be a great excuse, just about the time you decide, well, I'm going to make that commitment, you think, oh, no way, man, because if I do it, like, he is going to be so upset with me. He's not bitter, just waiting. So the question is, are you making him wait? And do you really want to make him wait any longer? Why would you want to? Sure, you got your reasons. But it's... So anyways, he decides he's not going to wait any longer, and he goes home, right? And he's dead. And his dad doesn't say anything to him when he sees him. Have you ever expressed your love for anybody that way? It's like you love them so much, and when you see him, you're just like, and all you can do is hug them and kiss them. Like, you, the couples out there, little lovebirds, are going to have kids someday. That's going to happen someday. Because when you see your kids sometimes, like, you know that words aren't going to do it. And that's what the Father is. He sees him from a long way off. And a lot of people think that in this story, what Jesus was trying to say is that God's always looking. He never gives up hope. He doesn't look and after about 3 months go, whatever. It hurts to go out on the porch and look again because he's not coming home. Are you waiting for anybody to come home? And you've stopped looking because it hurts too bad? You're like, man, but the Father's not like that. He's watching. He goes out again today. Any chance of it today? And when he sees him, he must have thought, today? What's special about today? By the way, whenever you turn to God, it's a special day. Don't wait for a special day. Make it a special day. So he turns to God, and the Father's like, whoa, special day. And he runs out there, and he doesn't say anything to him at all. He just hugs him and starts kissing him. And if that's a problem for you to see God that way, then you'll need to get over it, because it's in the Bible. If you see him as like all proper God with a tie on, he would not go to church without a tie on. That's how God rocks. And when he sees you, he says, nice to meet you, son. Glad you've arrived back home and come to your senses. If you can't see God as sort of slobbery, then you need to change your picture and your belief about God. Because he runs out and he's overjoyed. He grabs him and starts, like, he gets all, my wife is Hawaiian Portuguese, so he gets all Latin Portuguese Hawaiian on him. I mean, he doesn't even talk anything, because my wife, like, that would be how she would be, because she's got lots of emotion, and she would just grab you, and that's how God is. Like, he just grabs him and starts kissing him and hugging him and kissing him and hugging him. And the first thing he says, he tries to give his little speech to him. Dad, I know I've been a bad boy, but he just blows it off. And he says, quick, 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 we have to redress him. I wonder what he looked like. Because he's been gone a while partying pretty hard. You ever had any friends show up at your house at like 7:30 or 8 in the morning and they've been partying all night? They smell like a tall boy, and they're just like, you know, they got cigarette smell, and their shirt is unbuttoned about down to here, and they're like past being drunk because they were drunk last night, but they didn't go to bed, and they're like sort of drunk, but kind of not drunk, or like maybe you've gone to somebody's house like that. But anyways, you know, you show up, and you're like, why are you dressed like that? You know, it's like because they never got undressed and went to bed. You know what I mean? Well, that's how this guy shows up. He shows up at home. He's all partied out. But you know his clothes are all stained with the party and everything. And his dad sees him and goes, that's not the way you're supposed to look. That's not my son. So he whips out these cool clothes, which, by the way, jot in your notes, these clothes have always belonged to the son. There was just a time in his life that he didn't want to wear them. Have you ever got a glimpse of God's life for you and thought, not now. Someday. But not now. I got some girls to be with and I got some stuff to do. And just, I know those are the clothes I'm supposed to wear someday. But not now. Is God trying to dress you and you're like, no. I want to look like I just got out of a party. Clothes were always his. He says, go get his clothes, man. And something must have happened for the son because now he wants to wear them. Now he likes the robe. He's like, you saved it, Dad? You saved my clothes? It's like, oh yeah, we left your room just like it was. He knew he was always coming back. I get the ring. I've seen that ring all my life. I knew someday I was going to get the family ring. I get the ring now? I mean, I thought there'd be a big celebration or I'd do something really big. I mean, you're putting the ring on my finger, Dad? You noticed my shoes? You want God to redress you? He's got your clothes ready. If you want them. Now the son's like, dang, look at this robe. Before he ran off and tore it up, he's like, that old, no, my friends will tease me if I put that thing on. They find out I go to church. They find out I'm trying to read the Bible. I cut that on the down low, man. I can't be looking like that. Now he's like, look at this robe you saved for me. I can't even believe I get, God need to redress you. It is so nice to know, even if you're not ready, it is so nice to know that he has your clothes waiting for you. So when you show up, he doesn't say, oh, yeah, right now you want to come home. Seriously. We packed up your stuff the day you left. I think it's in the attic somewhere, or we took it to Goodwill or whatever. He's got your clothes waiting. If you want them. And it's a picture of God. This boy thinks, I can't make a commitment to God and ever be happy. And his dad says, well, I'm waiting. And when you're ready, you'll find out that committed is the best way to live. In fact, it's kind of crazy. He throws him a celebration. So here's what happens. The boy decides, I'm going to run off and party. And it tears his life up. And he comes home and his father says, let's have a party. Well, that's pretty crazy. He's thinking the whole time, if I make a commitment to God, say goodbye to parties. And he comes home and makes a commitment to God, and God says, let's have a party. Break out the PBR, baby. Kill the fat. And I'm not talking about like hot dogs and Diet Coke, because that's no party with like, you know, is the worst thing at a party ever like one of those veggie trays? Whoo, we're partying now, you know. No, I'm talking about like full-on steaks cooking. I mean, this is like a party, music going. And I'm sure the son was like, why did I ever leave? I had no idea. The same question I ask you. But for us, a lot of times if you're Christians, you don't run off. You just leave for a day or two or for a night. Or pornography on the computer, it's like, I'm just going to leave for like 2 hours. Which is crazy when you think about it, because like, you know, you really can't leave God. He's right there. I've often said one of the best ways to get healed is to invite God to join you in something that you don't want him to see. He's gonna anyways. So here's the thing with the younger son, and get what the father does. And oh, I did want to say this. It's in the safety of commitment that we have our greatest celebrations. So I know the idea is footloose and fancy fee, no commitments, nobody tells me what to do. But what I'm saying to you, in life, it's within the context of commitment. That's why we get married. I know the idea is I got to test drive it, live with them for 6 months, and then leave and someone else. And that's how it is. It's not true. In the context of commitment, we have our greatest celebration. The greatest celebrations in relationship happen in the context of commitment. At work, committed to greatest celebrations. You're going to get educated. You're going somewhere in your life. You have a commitment to go there. Your greatest celebrations will happen when you carry an attitude of commitment. That's what happens for this boy. So point number two, turn it over and let's look at this next guy. You can be happy when you're close. I didn't read that last part to you, but that's fine, that scripture, because we read it once before. But I am going to read this one. In fact, why don't we read it all together? It'll wake you up a little bit and just get your voice going. So, and please, don't leave the pastor hanging. Don't read like this. Just like, read it with me, okay? So here we go. One, two, three, read. My son, the father said, you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. Fantastic. And he was lost? There it is right there. So here's what's up now. Remember, this is Mr. Perfect. This is I've got everything together. You know, however your version is of Mr. or Mrs. Perfect, that's this guy. And here's his problem. This is why he's dead on the inside, because he's not close to anyone. His big dream is to run the family business. He's like, well, you can't miss business and family. And so he's very distant from his father. He's very distant from his brother. He doesn't have any friends. He's not close to anybody. And it's killing him on the inside. And here's the biggest reason. And listen to this, man. You got to get this. Here's the biggest reason. When nobody knows what you're going through, it kills you. Because he's all that. And he's like Mr. Perfect. And he's got this story and this image. And everybody's buying it. And he knows where he's really at in life. And listen, when you're hurting, when you're lacking, when you're in need, when you were like, stuff is not okay on the inside, the reason you don't want to fake it is because if you really convince everybody and nobody knows, it will kill you. I know we try so hard, we don't want anybody to know our crap. It's like, but then at the end, it's like kills our soul because we go to bed and go, nobody knows me. Nobody understands what I'm going through. And then it's a very small step to go here, and nobody cares. Well, because you're faking them all out. They don't know enough about you to care. And it kills me. One of the reasons we made this a safe church to like bring your stuff is because we realized that church has a reputation. Don't bring your stuff in here. Like, you need to look polished up and smiley and brother, sister, and have like your stuff together. And so you have to pretend that you're okay, and it kills people. So we decided since Jesus ate with the sinners, we will too. I always say this. I ruin the church every week before you get here because I'm the first one here. So I'm the first sinner in the door. I make a way for all the rest of them. Because we have decided this will be a church for everyone. You can bring your stuff in here. Because when you hide it, it kills you. And that's this boy. He's hiding it all, and he's really perfect, and he's not close to anybody at all. And his father comes to him, and he says the most interesting thing to him. He says, you don't have to earn anything with me. He knows where he wants to go, and here's what he says. He says, son, I've already decided to give you everything. Would that be crazy to spend your whole life trying to earn something that the other person had already decided they were going to give you? I mean, that would be like, you know, you work really, 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 really hard to get your dad's like classic Mustang. And I would take the 67 Fastback if it was me. So, you know, you're like, you work really, really hard. You're working really, really hard. If I'm a really good boy, I'm just going to be a great boy. And I'm going to, like, wash the family soccer van, which I hate. And I'm going to take care of my little brother. And I'm going to be awesome. And I'm going to be this really, really good thing. And you get 16 years old, and you're thinking, well, you know, Dad, and you're thinking, if I'm just really good for 5 more years, and your dad comes out, and he hands you the car keys, he says, I've been planning on giving this to you your whole life. You're like, oh, all that hard work down the drain. That's this boy. He's like, no way. Seriously? Get this, everything in life from God is a gift. You'll never earn a thing from him. It's a touch arrogant to think you could. What are you going to give God? Are you going to wow him with a cool present? You've seen it all. The cool thing about him, from my perspective, is he doesn't need anything from me. So many people in life do, you know? And that's how life is. I mean, you can just get, they just need something from you, man. And so, okay. And it's like, but with God, he's the one relationship, he doesn't need anything from you. He's really okay. So you can't earn anything with him. Everything from God is a gift. And so that's what happens with this father. He rolls in and he says to his son, he says right to him, life is a gift. I'm going to give you everything in life. You're not going to earn anything with me. Now here's the problem. The boy doesn't believe that. In his belief, this is what he believes about God. If you're ever going to get anything good with God, you're going to have to earn it. And here's his other thing. God's never going to give me my dream. He's going to impose his dream for me on my life. And you need to understand something. That's not how it works. And so the father comes and he says, I'm going to give you everything. And in the Bible, what that's called is grace. It means gift. If you can catch it, if the son can catch it and say, do you mean I get to stop trying to earn your love? I get to stop trying to earn being forgiven? Do you mean you're just going to give that to me? Why would you? It's called grace. And when you receive God's grace, you can be close to God and close to other people. And when you're close to God, you can be close to other people and you can help them be close to God. Now, let me say something to you. I just want to put something out because this is one of the greatest things I've found in life. Is when you go to bed at night and you know that you've caused somebody to be a little closer to God, somebody in your world, you see him every day or you see him once in a while, and you know that, you know in your heart that you, because of you, they're a little closer to God. Man, when you go to bed, when your head hits the pillow and you know that about your life, man, that is an awesome feeling. That is one of the best. And when you have the grace of God in you, you can have the grace of God for someone else. And here's how it works, just the opposite. When you try to earn everything, guess what? You'll make everybody earn everything with you. But if you have the grace of God, it changes everything in your relationships. There's a true story about a World War II. So I'm working with this guy right now, and he was in the military for a long time, National Guard now. And it just struck me again what it's like to be around a soldier. And regardless of your political views or anything like that, there's just something that's like, dang, dude, thank you. Because thank you. And so I was thinking of there's a story about this Japanese soldier, American soldier, World War II. It's in one of those islands in the South Pacific. The Japanese have got it, right? So they got control of the whole island. And the Americans, you know, us, we feel like, well, we got to have this island as strategic. And so they have this bloodbath fight. I mean, so there was like crazy fights that went on these islands. And so the Americans are charging this thing. They're trying to take this island back. It's very strategic. We have to have it. So we're all going to die. So they go do that, right? And the Japanese, they've got it. And they're dug in and they're waiting. And this one American soldier, he slips behind enemy lines. And he's on this tactical mission that he's trying to, you know, like blow up something or something like that, like TV. There's always this one guy that's got the, you know, and so that's his life, really. And this Japanese soldier catches him, comes up behind, gets the drop on him. And like he's got him. Years later, the American tells the story. And he said this Japanese started marching him back towards the camp where all the Japanese were. It was way back into this island, about an hour walk, and it was all camouflaged and stuff. And he's marching him back, and he's behind him. And he spoke just like a broken kind of an English, and he's marching him, right? He's got the gun on him. He's marching him. And this is a young kid, man, and he's Christian. And this is a young kid, and he's scared. He doesn't know, is he going to shoot me in the back and bury me out here? Are they going to torture me? Like, what's going to happen to me? And so you know, he's like on a death march, and the Japanese guys, go, 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 move, move, move. You know, he's got the gun on him, just rifle, just gone, no chance to run or anything. And this kid, as he's walking along, he still has no idea why. He just started thinking of that song, Amazing Grace. So first he's just singing it real low under his breath as he's walking, and he just starts, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. And he's singing this song real low, and things start changing for him, which grace will always do. So now he's walking and he's singing this song and he's getting a little bit louder. And it just, he didn't forget what was happening, but it was like the impact of his circumstances started changing for him. And now he's singing it aloud. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. And so now he's singing this song pretty loud. And he's like not forgot about the soldier, but he's like completely in a different space. And then all of a sudden, he hears this guy in broken English behind him, this Japanese guy, sing right along with him. I once was lost. Of course, his probably sounded, I want my lost. You know, he's Japanese, broken English, but he's singing anyways. And pretty soon, now this must have been comical, because they're walking down this path together and they're both singing, Lost and found, I once was blind. So they're singing this thing, right? And now I see. And as they get to the part where he comes over a hill and he sees this camp, they've been singing together for like 4 or 5 minutes. And all of a sudden, the Japanese soldier says, Stop! And when the American turns around and looks at him, the gun's on the ground. And he points the other direction and he says, Go. And he let him go. Because grace will always cause something between you and other people. So who is it that you know in your life and you're their best shot? You're their best shot, man. If you're filled with God's grace, you can give God's grace. And that's the Father in this one. He says, listen, I've already decided to give you everything. Don't have to earn anything anymore. Now live your life. Include some people. And look at the good news. You can write it in. God has given you everything you need. And this is the famous old scripture. I usually don't have us read twice in one night, but I thought it'd be cool if we would. And just a little louder than last time. Here we go. Ready? Go. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. So Jesus is telling the story, and track with this. He's telling the story, and he says about the Father that the Father is going to get everything. And I wonder how Jesus, like he's the voice of the Father, and he says the Father is going to give everything. And I wonder what it was like for him to say that, because Jesus knows what everything means. It means the cross for him. And he's telling this story. He's like, you know, I'm going to give everything. And he's like, God's not going to withhold anything. He's not even going to withhold me, his son. And the son, Jesus, is telling the story. And that's the heart of the Father. Everything. So you go to him sometime and you say, but God, that was the craziest weekend ever, and I did stuff I never should have done, and he says, yeah, but everything is forgiven. But God, I'm on the verge of bankruptcy and my credit cards are like $47,000. I'm never going to be able to pay them back. How am I ever going to get out of that? I mean, could you really do something? Everything is possible with me. Because God set the bar already. It was with the life of his son.